Spirit Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, and Tir na Sao in Ireland. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Ever Beyond. It is December the 20th, 2012. It's 2012, 2015. I've messed that one up. Anyway, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, everybody. Tonight's Ever Beyond, I think this might be the last one of the year. I don't know if I'll do one next week. My equipment is just kind of, what was I saying? Worn out. It's just like me, it's worn out. I need to, take everything into dry dock, take the whole system to pieces, and you have no idea how many cables and all things this is. And I have to, repair all the cables and repair all the computers and da-di-da-di-da, because it's all falling to pieces, and there's a terrible fault somewhere that I haven't quite discovered. actually, it sounds like my personality as well. I've probably got one of those. So, there's a terrible fault somewhere that I haven't quite discovered. Maybe this is part of the journey. I need to go into the dark mills of the inner fans and cogs and workings. And perhaps as someone who can prepare me a map of the territory, in this journey, I have my Ayurvedic, I think, expert. there's a whole different tongue here. Shelin Tetro.
You're doing well so far, JP.
I'm doing well with the pronunciation. And we're going to discuss the winter changes, what's going on in the inner atmosphere of the body as it goes through these changes, and how you can help it along or how you can hinder it. Really, is that a fair summary?
Yes, it absolutely is. And actually, I was looking at just where our moon is at, what phase of the moon is tonight, as we approach solstice. And it's really great because in the Vedic tradition, for each phase of the moon, there's a different goddess that's attributed to it. And for tonight, it's the goddess Nitya Nitya. And she is the giver of health and the guardian of the dhatus, or the tissues of the body. So very appropriate for our talk tonight. And actually solstice is anywhere from tonight to up till Tuesday, I believe. Is that what you have, JP, according to your calendar?
Say again?
The solstice is actually, I believe, Tuesday, but many traditions start practicing tonight. So there's a little bit of a range there.
Yeah. Well, there does seem to be some very strange thing going on also with all planets, that sometime during this month, no planets will be retrograde.
Interesting.
So that's another sign of alignment. So I love the sound of the goddess of the moon of the show.
Nitya.
Sorry, I just heard Nitty Nitty. So say that again slowly.
Yeah, close. Nitya Nitya. You say it twice. So it's N-I-T-Y-A. N-I-T-Y-A.
Nitya Nitya. Nitya Nitya. Yeah, it's lovely. Lovely sound.
Yeah, and also just very auspicious that we're having this discussion tonight. since she's the giver of health and the guardian of the tissues of the body. Since we'll be taking a little bit of a journey inside and internally, just to go along with winter solstice. Although maybe we have a few listeners who are in the southern hemisphere who are actually experiencing the opposite. Is that correct? They're actually experiencing going into the darkness from the light. So if we kind of can back up and look at a broader picture, then we see that, you know, there's always this balance in play between dark and light, and there's always a shift and a change that occurs. But I really do love the idea of, in a moment of time, if you believe in linear time or you follow that idea, there is this still point that occurs around the solstice. So as we keep going further and further and further into darkness, there's a still point that occurs before we change direction and begin to go into the light. So that can appear as incredible darkness for some people. And I know we were just touching on this before the show, that at this time of year, a lot of people are affected by seasonal affective disorder. And there's different viewpoints in the tradition of Ayurveda, different understandings of what that could be, and also how to work with that. So we could definitely go into that today. I think that would be hopefully helpful for your listeners. And I think that's a great place to start. I do have a mantra as well that has to do with healing and conquering death. And we can think of death as some kind of stagnation within us, or confusion and not knowing how to move forward in our lives. So if I have the guts, I may chant this mantra for you and your listeners, if you're open to that. But we'll see. We'll see how I'm feeling. And also, you know, if any callers wish to call in, that might be interesting as well. If JP, if you're up for that.
Yes, the telephone number is 775-773-3431 in America and Canada and presumably Mexico. Also 0141-356-4141 in the United Kingdom. And if you're in other parts of the planet, or maybe even off planet, we haven't received a Skype call from off planet yet.
But ooh, that was so much fun.
I think it's Wall Spirit Radio. I think it's just plain Wall Spirit Radio. Just that's it. I think you try to call it, and it'll answer, or it'll come to me. Anyway, that's how we get through. But there's there isn't. I was going to say there is a link on the page, but no, there hasn't been a link on the page for a while because the website got hacked and broke and stuff. Anyway, long story. Lots of long stories. Lots of things to fix. This is the thing. Okay, can you tell me a little bit about the degradation of things that have happened over the last 9-10 months? It just feels like we've been ramming ourselves into walls after walls after walls, and things just break from the psychic pressure of it all, it seems.
Yeah, I agree. It's very difficult, especially for people who are sensitive to that. Actually, everyone is sensitive. Some people just don't know. In Ayurveda, there's an understanding that we're all born with everything we need. We're born connected to nature, connected to the divine. And what happens is when we forget that our true nature is connected to the divine and connected to spirit, connected to nature, that's when illness occurs. So there are different elements within us, and we touched upon this, I think, in either the last time I was on or the time before that. But there's this understanding, since people kind are not separated from the natural world, we actually contain the natural world within us. And a way to heal is to find a way to remember that, and to remember that we are connected to everything. So the elements that we are made up of are, from lightest to most dense, are ether, air, fire, water, and finally Earth, that's the most dense. And these elements are also predominant at different times of the year. And so the time of year that we are in, we're sort of right in the middle of the most prevalent time of air and ether. And that's also called Vata, V-A-T-A. And so air and ether and the idea of Vata, we have this principle within all of us. And it's the dosha, D-O-S-H-A, which is responsible for movement. So all movement of the body. And if we do not have enough stability in our lives, stability in our physical bodies, if we don't have enough fire or digestive power to metabolize everything, to process all of our perceptions, then this movement in our body can go awry and begin to break down the body and the mind. So seasonal affective disorder is influenced heavily by what we call Vata, V-A-T-A. I started doing a little bit of investigating because I'm always interested in the chakras and the glands in the body that are associated with the chakras. And so I was kind of doing a little bit of reading and thinking a little bit about the pineal gland, our friend Mrs. Pineal Gland. And the pineal gland is affected quite a bit by light. And I think, JP, you've even discussed this before, that there are actual rods and cones as part of the cellular structure of the pineal gland.
That's right.
So in a way, the gland, yes, so the gland is absolutely considered a type of eye, in a sense. And so if that gland is not given the proper amounts of light and dark, then imbalance can occur, because this is the site, many things happen with this little gland, and I think we're just beginning to understand the immensity of this gland in the center of our brain. It produces melatonin, and melatonin is a hormone that initiates restful sleep, among other things. It's a protective type of hormone. So often if people are have disruption with their the amount of light that they receive, you know, natural daylight, and so not either too much daylight, which isn't very often, it's actually the other way around, too much darkness and artificial light, interior light, and not enough external natural light, there can be some imbalances that can occur with the production of melatonin. So and it's becoming, I think seasonal affective disorder is becoming more and more prevalent because we're kind of holed up a lot more. You know, we're separated from the outside. You know, people are being asked to work incredibly long hours, and that kind of thing. So there's different ways that we can address this. And but first, I think I'd like to talk a little bit about the different types of people that are recognized in Ayurvedic medicine. How does that sound to you, JP?
we love you. Well, you know, my whole thing is the seven rays, and so that's all about different tendencies and qualities of energy as they manifest into matter. So along the lines of that process you were talking about. So I'm sure that, you know, obviously it's true because Ayurveda works, and that's why, you know, you're always spot on. And the seven rays are true, so there's got to be a correlation. And they even say there's a law of correspondences.
Right. There is a correlation between the two traditions, I believe. And I really love the idea that Ayurvedic medicine is so old. It's been around for 5,000 years or more, which I guess in the grand scheme isn't very long. But in certain perspectives, it certainly is. If you compare it to allopathic medicine, it's been around a heck of a lot longer. So through direct observation and experience over time, people began to learn what worked and what didn't. Actually, in saying that, Ayurveda is not really a process of trial and error, because that would take forever. you know, to keep trying different things willy-nilly until something works to heal the body. Ayurveda is actually, it came about because there were groups of people that recognized disease was occurring and really wanted to find out why. So these groups of people called rishis, ancient seers, would sit and they would still their minds. They would become quiet and begin to observe, and they would observe the natural world. They would also go into a meditative state and receive divine knowledge. So through observing the natural world and how the natural world interacts, they came to understand that a way to get rid of disease was to incorporate balance through the natural world. And that could be daily practices, so daily habits that people could form to bring their body back into balance, as well as the use of certain plants and herbs. So they definitely communed with the herbs and the plants. Also different body therapies and the way food is prepared. There's so many ways, so many avenues in which a person can be brought back to health. So there's three main types of people, and now you have to realize that within the three main types, there's going to be an infinite amount of variation. But it is important to talk about the three main types of people, because that's a great starting point. And I believe your listeners will start to resonate with some of the things I'm going to describe. So earlier I talked about Vata, V-A-T-A, and that dosha is made up of primarily air and ether. And so we have three different doshas within us that are made up of the five elements, and Vata being one of them, air and ether. The second one is called Pitta, P-I-T-T-A, which is made up of fire, mostly fire, and a little bit of water. And then finally, there's Kapha, which is K-A-P-H-A, which is earth and water. So an individual will have all five elements, all three doshas, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, within them, but one or two will be more predominant. And so that's how we are individualized, is that there's different amounts of elements within us. So, for example, a Vata person who will be expressed mostly as having more air and ether, more so than the other elements, more so than fire, more so than water and earth. Some tendencies of a Vata person would be that they are naturally creative, vivacious. They love movement, so a lot of dancers. They love excitement and change and travel. They are hard to pin down. They can change from one emotion to another quite rapidly. They have a tendency towards fear. Their habit of reactive emotion may be towards fear. They tend to be, in terms of physicality, a thinner frame, lanky, either very tall or very short. Vata expresses the extremes, so they tend to be quite thin and sensitive. So that's kind of a very generalized overview of what a Vata predominant person is like. So the second one would be Pitta. And Pitta is made up of the elements mostly fire and a little bit of water. And so a Pitta person is sort of medium build. They make strong leaders. They can be quite competitive and athletic. They are driven and quite focused. Their tendency is to go towards anger in terms of an emotional reaction. They tend to go towards, they have a little bit of a temper. They go towards anger. Their face gets red really easily. Those are just a few examples of a Pitta predominant person. And then finally, our dear Kapas, who I love. I need more Kappa people in my life. So if you're a Kappa person, be my friend. They are predominantly earth and water. So if you think about earth and water, that's kind of like mud. That makes mud. So the Kappa people are very stable. Their frames are generally more compact. So they have kind of dense bones and shorter, dense muscles. Kind of, they have a moon face. They're very kind, generally slow moving, very loyal. Their tendency is towards attachment. So their emotional tendency would be to stay attached to things, to not want to move on, to not want to let go. And a tendency towards sadness and the heavier emotions. Now, any person can have all of these emotions, and we all do. So I'm just talking about the tendencies that people have. So in saying that, we are also living in a culture, both in the UK, where JP is, and in the US, where I am, and many other Western cultures. We are all dealing with Vata. That's the air and ether, the idea of movement. We are all dealing with a Vata derangement, which means too much movement, misdirected movement. Things are happening way too fast in terms of even like traffic and input from television and everything so fast. Heavy workloads, very demanding. So as well as the sense that it feels like our earth is speeding up. So there's a lot of Vata happening right now.
Okay.
And that will tend to, throw everyone off.
All right. So
as well as,
sorry, can I kind of jump in? Hang on.
Please jump in. That was a lot of information.
Yeah. Hang on. As I said, my equipment is, It's sorely needing repair. everything's...
yeah.
So I just want to kind of chuck in where the rays might fit in there, because... But what's interesting, okay, so there was the personality type that also was the physical type. Now, it's interesting, because you were describing Vata...
Yes.
Now, first of all, you said it describes tall, thin people.
Yeah. Generally speaking.
In general,
or
right?
Short, thin people.
Now, then I would think, okay, well, that sounds like first ray, because first ray people have a tendency to be these tall, thin people. You know? Like politicians and things like that. Like John Kerry, imagine. You know, that really lanky.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, even Obama. Obama's pretty lanky.
Yeah.
Tall.
Yeah.
Abe Lincoln. Now I'm thinking of all these politicians.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, in order to be a politician, you have to be tall and shout loud. You know, in the old days, that's what it used to take. You know, that's what you had to be. You know, nowadays it just takes a lot of, I'm not even going to say, a lot of compromises. So,
that's a whole can of worms.
That is a very large and sticky can of worms.
Dark can of worms.
So you were talking about the Vata personality, but actually what you were describing is this one of movement, which is the third ray. So third ray covers movement and logistics and computers and networks and movement of any kind, from information, movement of information like teaching, you know. That's the education system, let's say. It takes the second ray, which is now. Okay, so you're talking about the pitta, right? I always think, I now associate with the pitta bread, but that really sounds like the first ray. People who are who are leadership types. Third ray people get into leadership roles because of manipulation. Second, ray two people get into leadership roles through popularity, and first ray people get into leadership roles because they think they're naturally entitled, because they're just natural born leaders. That sort of, you know.
Yeah, natural born
I am a natural-born leader of men, you know. First rate people are very annoying. Let's just put it that way. And they annoy people into action, into doing things. There's your pita. And your what was your third one? Prabha? No?
Kapha. K-A-A-P-H-A. Kapha.
Kapha. Kapha. Okay, so that one sounds like the second ray, who are the more... the less kind of motivated, but the more service oriented.
Definitely service oriented.
You know, they like a nice meal.
Absolutely. Well,
a little gathering, you know.
Pitta people.
Who doesn't?
Mm-hmm. So do Pitta people. Pitta people have so much fire, their appetites are quite strong.
That can become the intense gluttony and the excesses of like the Borgias and the who was that guy, Roman Emperor Caesar thing, Caligula.
Oh
yeah, that sort of thing. That, you know, the thing completely gone wrong. Yeah.
Right. Yes, and so the three types, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, there's positive aspects, and then the tendencies are when these doshas go out of balance.
Right, okay. Okay, so now I've established our sort of basic link there, that that's our trinity, and everything works off a trinity, so your trinity is Vata, Pitta, it just sounds like one of these fraternities, doesn't it? Vata, Pitta, Kapha.
It does, especially the way you say it.
Yeah. This is the Ayurvedic personal manifestation trinity. Should we put it that way? Can we put it that way?
We could put it that way. Awesome. And within the three, there's five.
Of course.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just saw it as a passion flower. Which is,
what about passion flower?
A passion flower is I used to grow them. They're beautiful things. They have these, they have a triple and quintuple stamens that interlock with each other. A three and a five.
Oh, very cool.
That interlock in this geometric pattern. Beautiful.
They're used in Ayurvedic medicine as a way to help particularly Pitta people. They have a cooling nature to them, passion flowers, even though they're named passion flowers. If you make a tincture, although tinctures weren't necessarily traditionally used, but a tincture of passion flower can really help a Pitta person who's overheated with sleep. So, anyway, that's a little side note.
That's very interesting. Because you can smoke passion flower as a kind of a very pleasant, calming, euphoric, they call it. It's got
is it the flower or the leaf?
You can smoke the whole lot. You know, you can recognize it because you get these, herbal smoking mixtures that aren't tobacco for people who are trying to give it up. You know?
Yeah, right. That's used medicinally in Ayurveda as well.
Yeah. Well, it's active, and it's very mild and it's very pleasant. You know, so you know if you can't get a bowl, you know, grow some passion flower, dry it out, and you can smoke it directly. They've got some very distinctive little curly. What do they call them? It's a climbing plant, so it's got these little strands that come out and then go curl around things. And so they're very distinctive little coils that come in the mixture of this stuff. If you ever see it, and you know that you get it in these legal high things. Anyway, so passion flower.
Sure.
It's not only beautiful. It flowers a lot around the year. You can grow it in Britain. You can grow it in London, so it's not bad.
A few things that you can grow in Britain.
I know. It's really just, you have to be very happy about it. It has a cooling effect if you make a tincture of it, and this is good for the Pitta people. Yes, for the first angry, ragey people.
Well, if they're out of balance, yes, because there's. Yes, if only if they're out of balance. I mean, Pitta people who are in balance won't be ragey. So, and that actually, when you brought up Britain and the difficulty in growing things there, that made me think of when I lived in Scotland for about half a year. I did notice that I was having a hard time keeping my spirits up because of how much less sunlight I was experiencing. I remember that distinctly. I remember that being a challenge, actually. Really trying hard to keep my spirits up because I couldn't connect to the sun as much as what I was used to. So it really, it took a lot of effort for me to make sure that I spent quite a bit of time outdoors as much as possible, even if it was gray out, because you're still getting some of the sun coming through. And then I supplemented with vitamin D3. I do that actually in the wintertime here in the States as well. Because the angle of the sun is...
I would totally recommend it. Now, where is it? In Britain, have you got a thing that going beep?
I think I might. So I think I will close that up.
It's just coming over the thing. You know, you're having it. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
That's right. It sounds like you're on an aeroplane. And, you know, so please fasten your safety belt.
Yes, it does sound like
a soft ping that I have. Anyway, So what I discovered, I used to stay with he's my brother-in-law, and he is a researcher, and he did lots of research into our environment and health and things like that. Has come up with, you know, I help him with his database, which is all these medical articles about things like this. And one of the things that he's got is the sunlight that you get in Britain is insufficient. Even if you were to stand outside all day, is insufficient to raise enough vitamin D for you to be healthy without supplementing it. So
yeah,
I would totally recommend, if you're anywhere north of 51 degrees, which is where London is, or, you know, 50 degrees above, and I'm 57, and, you know, we're going to have auroras tonight, but we don't get much sunlight. So we have to get our energy sources other ways. You know, I think in a way, you have to go deep within, because if you won't find it outside of you, and you have to really go inside to find the bright sun spirit. And I think this is the challenge of living in the northern climate, is it's an inner, you know, it's really, it's quite, you know, you go north and you find yourself in some cave somewhere, because that's the only way to survive is to be in some kind of cave somewhere. Even if it's a stone cottage.
Yes. Well, I wonder, you know, there's a link between people living in dark areas, you know, areas where either the angle of the sun is so extreme that they don't receive a lot of sunlight. There's a correlation between that and drinking. So alcohol has a lot of fiery quality to that. So it could be, you know, some kind of innate need to try to find balance that way. But we have our own inner fire, and it's called Tejas.
Spell it, please.
That's what I'm like, I'm throwing another word at you.
Yeah, you gotta spell these words.
Okay. T-E-J-A-S.
Right. So I'd pronounce that Tejas. Like the ZZ Top album. So you call it Tejas.
Yeah, Tejas.
Yeah.
It's our most
but it's not contagious. And if I make jokes of it, I remember. I am being silly, but I mean, it's like helping. And this quality is what?
We have room for jokes, absolutely. rhymes are another good way to remember. Mm-hmm. It is the finest quality of light, of truth, and we all have this within us. And so there are ways to cultivate Tejas, and it's balanced by two other refined essences called Ojas and Prana. And a lot of people are familiar with the idea of Prana, kind of our inner vitality in a nutshell. And then Ojas is it's the most refined essence of strength and immunity. And Ojas kind of holds and contains Tejas and Prana, which are more mobile in quality. So, seeking out truth, you know, the truth within us, really helps to raise and balance Tejas, our inner light. And I was going to say that out of those three types, Vata, Pitta, Kapha, three types of people, there's a type of depression that can happen for each of these three types that are slightly different in appearance. And so I wonder if I should speak a little bit about that, the three different nuances of depression that are recognized in Ayurveda. It might interest your listeners, especially if they feel like they relate more to one than another. What do you think, JP?
I think... perhaps, you know, people could kind of decide for themselves what group they fit into, and then
yes.
you can give the rundown on each of the groups.
Right. So, normally you would associate generalized depression with kapha, with earth and water, because if you think about those elements, they're the most dense and heavy of the five. So depression has kind of a heavy quality to it. We don't want to engage with people. We usually don't want to move around so much. You know, we feel this heaviness within us, this lack of motivation, this lack of stamina, of wanting to even manifest anything. So it's predominantly considered a kapha state of being that's out of balance. But both vata and pitta people can also experience depression. And for a vata person, it may manifest more as an oscillation, because when you think of vata, you think of movement. So an oscillation between going from anxiety, so a very high, frenetic kind of emotion, down to depression, so a more static, still depleted sort of feeling. So that's sort of how vata depression is described. And then a pitta type depression would be more a burnout. So a burnout, like doing so much that you just burn yourself out, too much fire, too much action, that you become so depleted, you're depressed. And then finally, just the straight out kapha depression, which is just a heaviness and lack of ability to move. So they can, you know, it can manifest slightly differently for people. And there are slightly different ways to address these heavier expressions of depression. So I'm sure you're going to, you know, you won't be surprised to hear, well, how can we connect back with nature? How can we remember that we are not separate from nature and get back into balance? So for vata types, it's really helpful if you're oscillating between anxiety and depression to find a way, and this is going to be hard because this will go against your imbalanced tendencies, but you want to try to find a way to create regular routines that will really help stabilize these emotions, even if you just start off a little bit at a time. So one example would be to wake up at the same time every morning and go to sleep at the same time every night as much as possible. Another example would be to have your meals at the same time every day. Is really about routines that can really help to balance vata-type depression. Another useful thing for vatas is to try to make sure that they properly nourish themselves and stay warm. Vata people have a tendency towards cold. And as we enter into winter with the solstice, we are entering into the coldest part of the year. So this is going to be very aggravating for vata type of people. And then for pitta type of people with experiencing depression, it can be really helpful to really try not to push too hard with your work. Pitta people become workaholics. That's one of the things they become addicted to and then burn out. And then can't move anymore. They get so depleted and burnt out. So calm, try to stay calm, try to not work as much. So take breaks, go outside, experience what's happening in the bigger picture in the world around you. Try not to get so focused that you can only see what's happening in your own little world or project or thing that you're doing at work. Passion flower, like we talked about before, that's a useful herbal remedy if you're having issues with sleep, which is creating further depletion and depression. I'm just giving a few examples for each dosha because there's actually quite a few that we can go into further later on. So lastly, for kapha depression, it's really helpful actually to have other people around you. So welcome friends. And this is hard when you're in the depths of depression. You don't want anyone around you. I understand this. but to really try to have people around you to help you, to motivate, just to get up and get moving, to just go for a short walk and get your lungs moving. We hold a lot of grief and heaviness in our lungs. So if you could just go for a walk and breathe in the fresh morning air, that can be helpful to get motivated. Also in the morning, for Kapha people, try not to sleep in too late, which would be very hard to avoid if you're feeling depressed. But when you get up in the morning, you can do a type of self-massage by just vigorously rubbing your arms and legs to get the blood flowing. That can help take away some of the feelings of stagnation, for example. So there's so much more we could talk about. I can go over this idea of seasonal cleanse and rejuvenation. That's another really big practice that can help people avoid these feelings of depression at this time of the year. So JP, that's kind of up to you if you want me to go into that now, or if we can should go off on a tangent or whatever you want.
Ooh, off on a tangent. I can easily do that. That's a path of release resistance for me. I'll find you if there's any form of tangent, you know, any tiny little angle of phase shift. You know, I keep talking.
I'm trying to figure out, JP, what your predominant dosha is, if it's Vata, Pitta, or Kapha. Some people have two. Some people are two predominant doshas, like it might be a Vata, Pitta. And so I'm trying to figure it out, but you know, I haven't.
Well, you see, here's what you might be confused by is that I've got my rays are 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
So I'm broadband on a lot of those things. I'm a bit shy on the old Pitta, but I do relate to these. I do relate to the little frustrations that you were talking about. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But like, you know, my tendency when I encounter stress is to I have a bit of a temper, so I tend to get angry. Luckily, not in any kind of uncontrollable way, but it's my go-to emotion, as opposed to withdrawing or getting fearful. The other emotions definitely come up, but they're not my go-tos. So I'm definitely a predominantly Pitta person, for better or worse. Now, there's such great things about all of the doshas, all the individual types of personalities. So it's just we all have things we need to work out.
And when you're trying to find somebody's predominant dosha, what are your indications that one or the other? You know, I mean, obviously, you could look at somebody's physicality. Now, I would say I had a somewhat corpulent body type. It's soft.
I don't know what corpulent means. It's soft.
I'm not bony. Let's put it that way. Cuddly.
Have you always been that way?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you might be a Kapha.
You might be.
You've always been, even as a teenager, would say.
Ever since I was a kid, I was sort of chubby.
Is your bone structure quite strong, or is it not? Is it sort of in between?
My body type is very average. I'm exactly, you know, 5 feet eight high. I'm very average in terms of the actual physical frame. I'm not thick boned, and I'm not thin boned, and sort of regular size.
Yeah, so average is more Pitta.
Mm-hmm.
Average is more Pitta. Yeah, so there's so many ways. It actually takes me about an hour and a half to 2 hours to assess someone's dosha.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many things to look at, and you also ask the patient a lot of questions, mm-hmm. and you also read their pulse.
Mm-hmm.
So the pulse, actually, the way that their blood, you know, their pulses hit your fingertips when you're reading their pulses, gives you a lot of information in terms of their prakriti, in terms of their constitution, because what happens is life occurs, and we get hit with all of these experiences, sometimes traumatic, sometimes things that are beneficial, some experiences which are not, which will mask potentially what our true constitution is. So some people may think that they're a vata because they're quite thin and underweight, but it's just because they have a vata type imbalance. Does that make sense?
Hang on a second. So you could have one kind of personality. System. Let's call it a personality system because it's like it's not a thing; it's a collection of things. You could have one type of personality, but you could be displaying a personality or a symptom of an unbalanced quality that is not necessarily predominant of that personality that you're currently holding. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Could that be a result of a past life? Karma that needs to be cleaned up.
That's an interesting idea. My understanding is that when you're born into an incarnation, your individual constitution comes through with you, and you could have past karmic experiences that are changing your... Well, they never change your constitution, but affecting your constitution, sure, on an etheric level. Absolutely. Also, the experience of the mother, of your mom, as you're being grown and gestating, that could affect your constitution as well. So you could be born with imbalance, which is really sad. It's a really sad thought, but, we all have a chance to heal. So, past life karmas can leave imprints for sure. They may stay in the karmic field, though. They may not come all the way down into the physical body. Although, in saying that, there is an idea, it's called dravagunya, which is inherent weakness in the body. People all have different inherent weakness. It's like a pathway that forms in your body, pathway of where imbalance can occur easily, more easily than in other parts of your body.
Like a path of least resistance.
Yes, path of least resistance, and that feels very karmic to me. So, say in a past life you died of some kind of lung disease, so every time in this incarnation, every time you get a cold, it immediately goes into your lungs. You know, that could be a karmic imprint. So, but we can clean up and heal things from the past, so past karmas... It doesn't matter.
So
I liked that question. That was a question.
So hang on. I can't hear myself. There we are. So we need to reduce our karmic footprint. Yeah, I recommend listening to Ever Beyond Radio. So, by the way, you can call in if you're listening and you wish to inquire of this very interesting way of looking at medicine, which seems actually completely natural. I'm just like, oh, I could do with it, you know. Well, anyway, this kind of understanding in the Western tradition a little bit more. But this is, I mean, it's like, you know, it's the different, it's approaching health and disease from a different end. It's like keeping your body healthy rather than treating a disease.
Yes, there is a preventative aspect to it, for sure. But we can also reverse imbalances and diseases that occur. So it's actually, you can approach health from two perspectives. So the disease process could already be occurring, or you could work to prevent. And of course, that's ideal. And there's a wonderful practice. It's called Ritu Charya, which is seasonal cleanse. It's R-I-T-U, Ritu, which is seasonal, and Charya, C-H-A-R-Y-A, which is a practice or a routine. So at the juncture of every season, and one of it, which would be now, the juncture between fall and winter in our hemisphere, is the appropriate time to practice an internal cleanse, rest, and rejuvenation. And so there's a whole process involved with that. And JP, we spoke about this, I believe, in one of the other times I was on your show. It's quite involved. It usually should be done under the guidance of a practitioner, just to make sure that when you're doing this cleanse and rejuvenation, you're not creating further imbalance. Everyone needs slightly different approaches to this seasonal cleanse. It can be done really mildly, really easily. It involves things such as a process called internal oleation. It involves eating a very simplified mono diet for a number of days. It involves different therapies, body therapies. Certainly involves a period of rest. That is something that most people find the hardest to do. When I work with people, finding the time to rest and to give appropriate time to doing the cleanse is very difficult, but it is necessary. And then there's a period of rejuvenation. So after we go through this process of going inward into all of our tissues, all the tissues of our body, and scrubbing away and working with clearing out what doesn't serve us anymore, we have the tissues of our body that have been cleansed that also need rejuvenation. So it's quite a process. I'm happy to talk about it in more detail if people are interested in learning more about that. That actually happens right around this time. This solstice is a great time to begin that practice. You know, if we think about what's happening now, we're just finishing up going into the deepest, darkest hours, and we're starting to come back to the light. So to go inward, to go internally within, to get quiet, to do some cleansing, to get rid of what is not serving us, what is not working for us, it's really an opportune time to kind of be in communion with what's happening on the planet and the sun and the earth. So we can talk more about that, Rutucharya. We can also talk about a beautiful practice. It's actually a ceremony called Agnihotra. It's a fire ceremony. Can we talk a little bit about that? I thought that would be a really nice thing to bring up because it's really about working with light with a sacred intent, and anyone can do it. So we could talk about that as well. Maybe those two things, and then eventually I'll chant for everybody.
Cool.
And JP, I wish you knew this chant because then I wouldn't be on my own.
I could make some. I could do some sort of drone for you. I could have a sort of a background wash of a sort of sitari sort of tambura sound if you need.
Oh, that would totally work. That would totally work. That would be great.
I'll see what I can drum up.
I'm like, I'm ready.
So, well, I mean, it'll take a while, but I can certainly put that into the feed and send it down both ends, and
okay.
And it'll give you. You tell me what. Do you know what notes there are? Do you have a?
No. Which is actually a shame because I'm married to a musician. I should know all of this, but I don't.
Well, there's, you know, it's another set of correspondences, you know. The correspondence of music,
yes,
to medicine. I've spoken with Shari Edwards a lot on this whole subject, music, medicine, mathematics being the same thing.
Mm. Yes, she does a lot of sound healing from what you told me. I went to her website and took a look.
Yeah.
So that's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, the idea of Om.
Yes.
The word Om is the primordial sound of creation, and so when we repeat that word Om, we're connecting to our primordial source. It's really important, and the word Om is in this chant. So, if you don't mind, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Rutucharya.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break first.
Well,
in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
We take a break because people do need to visit the little girl's room, or little boy's room.
The loop.
Yes.
Is that what you call it? The
We have many words. We have many words.
Yes,
like,
so do we.
Like the Inuit have many words for snow. We have many words for rain as well, and a misty kind of nondescript kind of weathery thing. Got names for
all
it.
All the nuances behind, yes. I understand after living there that you would have all the nuances.
So, yeah, so, no, where should we, what do you want to, cap this hour off with? If you could kind of, find a way of bringing that all together. We talked about the three different personality, groups, types.
Yes.
The different doshas and, how they may be, you know, what is the appropriate kind of medicines and treatments for them. Well, we did passion flower for the Pita type, which calms them down, chills them out. So, what
cools
was
them off?
Yeah. What in summary, what were the herbs that kind of countered those three different what we'd call glamours? You know, what you know, difficulties,
sure.
Challenges, issues.
Sure. Some useful herbs for a Vata type would be ones that are warming and grounding. Generally speaking, so ashwagandha, which is an Ayurvedic herb, that's a really wonderful root that can be taken to help with grounding and to calm and balance that movement. A culinary herb that's great for vata would be ginger. That helps. Ginger can help many things, but one thing can help the absorption of nutrients. Often vata people have a hard time absorbing nutrients properly. For a Pitta person, you want to think cooling. So we talked about passion flower. Also, dandelion root is wonderful. It's cooling. It's good for the liver, and the liver tends to hold a lot of heat. So it gently clears and cools off the blood in the liver, among many other things. A good culinary herb for Pitta types would be fennel seed. That also aids with absorption, but also helps to balance excess heat in the body and in the digestive system. And then for a Kapha person, they actually would benefit from a more balancing or stimulating nervine herb, and that would be Tulsi. Tulsi, actually all three doshas can take, but Tulsi would be slightly stimulating if need be for a Kapha person. And a good herb for a Kapha person to culinary herb would be black pepper or cinnamon. It's also stimulating, and black pepper is good. It helps to get rid of excess water in the body. So I would say those are just some herbs off the top of my head that would be useful.
Excellent. So with that, let's go through. Now, I don't have any Ravi Shankar, or I do actually have a Ravi Shankar album, but it's 45 minutes long, and that's a bit too much for a potty break. So I'm going to play someone from Glasgow, actually a Paisley band, to be more precise. I met up with them about 10 years ago, and I just fell in love with this song. I just love it. So it's called The Learning How to Feel by the Lindsay Dolan Band from Paisley. They probably don't exist anymore, but they were great. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. Oh, yes, indeed. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, a listener-supported station, indeed. We are supported by your subscriptions, which are... We don't pick your pockets every month. You know, if you want to dip into the archives, you know, just drop us a fiver and then ping. You can download as much as you like. You can ream it. You could drink it dry, and we would probably still fill your hard drive. It would probably still take you longer than a weekend. You'd need a server to do it. You'd need actually, 160 gigabytes on a server to do that in less than a month. Just saying. Anyway, so for a mere $5, you can access this vast library of really interesting stuff, old super soldier stuff, stuff that is still secrets, really, stuff that is like beyond disclosure. It's all there, and you know, some of the conversations that they've also had with other super soldiers like Duncan O'Finian and the other guys that he trained and all these people, was very, very worth it. So we're keeping it alive. We've got a Dave Speaks show where a selected archive will be played Check the schedule for that. The schedule is on wolfspiritradio.com/listen. This is JP on Ever Beyond, on Ever Beyond Radio, on the alternative Sunday service on Wolf Spirit Radio. So, hopefully, we have a calm baby ready for bed.
We do.
That's good.
She's very happy. She was very excited to see me, so that's why.
Oh, that's lovely. So you had enough time, right?
Yes. Yeah. She's fine. She's upstairs with her papa.
Yeah. Bless his heart. So, and indeed, thank you, Papa, for taking the little parenting role right just now. I know it's like
exactly. Yeah.
Thank you. So, where did we go? We had. So we had, you can do the call-in thing if anybody wants to call in. I've found Shevin's note. we'll discuss that later, your frequency, and it's just interesting. Where would you like to go from here?
Well, we could get more into talking about the seasonal cleanse that can benefit people both physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Oh, yes, that's a really appropriate brush. Thing.
The seasonal what?
Bottle brush.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You take medicines. You take herbs and things that kind of are a little bit more abrasive than usual. To
for a time,
insides, yeah.
Although, yeah, there's one main herb, herbal, not compound, but herbal formula that you take during this time, and there are others that can be taken depending on the person, but the main herb that's used at this time, and it can actually be used outside of the cleanse as well, is called triphala. It's triphala. And that means three fruits. So it's Amalaki, Bibitaki, and Hirataki. Those are just the names of the three different fruits that are in this herbal formula. And this herbal formula is actually akin to magic, in my opinion, because it has so many beneficial qualities to it. It scrubs metabolic wastes called ama from all the tissues of the body. It helps our body eliminate properly, but it also helps to nourish the blood tissue. So it's slightly rejuvenative as well. It has a lot of antioxidant vitamin C in it, so it's nutritive as well. And not all herbs work this way. A lot of herbs can be cleansing or they can be nutritive. It's sometimes hard to find herbs that will do both at the same time. So it's a really great herb that's used quite a bit during this cleanse. Prior to that and before the idea of scrubbing out the inside, you actually have to prepare the inside. So we do this by a method called internal oleation. So you actually ingest fairly large quantities of an oily substance.
I was just going to say, like, thistles and nettles.
Oh, well, nettles are fairly nutritive. And I don't know about thistles. They're pretty sharp, aren't they? They're pretty spiny.
I was joking with Sean the other day. We we have two flavors of ice cream in Scotland, haggis and thistle.
Oh, gosh, I believe it.
Door.
I actually tried haggis when I was there because you have to, you know. I tried it, and that is an experience that I will have once. Some people think it tastes delicious, but I wish that I could feel the same, but I couldn't.
Oh, bless your heart. You're probably you're a dyed-in-the-wool vegetarianist.
No, I'm actually not.
All right.
I don't eat red meat because I made friends with cows. I lived across the street from some cows, and I thought, yeah, no, I can't do this. It is a heavy vegetarian diet in Ayurveda, but meat is sometimes used medicinally So that is something to consider.
I'm having this steak for medicinal purposes only.
Well, it would be more in the form of things like bone broths. So someone who is suffering from like a vata imbalance in the asti dhatu, which would be the equivalent of what Western medicine considers osteoporosis. The ingestion of bone broths can be beneficial. So, yeah. I don't know if steak is beneficial for anybody. I'm not sure. It's very, very hard to digest.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, tonight I had a Chinese meal because I went out with some friends and we, you know, picked up a takeaway. I had one of these things where it has got a selection of all the different meats in it, and I was like looking at it, I was going, thank you, little prawnies. Thank you to all the little prawnies. Thank you, little piggy, and little for giving you such a sweet meat, and just blessing each and every little piece of meat as I was eating it.
It's actually very important. It's very important. And that's actually a regular practice in Ayurveda, is to really give thanks before you eat. Because it has different effects on the spiritual level. You know, you're getting into a state of gratitude before you nourish yourself. So you're preparing, you're giving acknowledgement to that spiritual side of things and to all the life forces that have transferred their energy over to nourishing you. It's a kind of a big thing. I don't want to say the word sacrifice. It's a service. It's like a gift that when we receive nourishment from plants and animals. So giving thanks before you eat is really a regular practice that's important. I have a patient who is 96. Bless her. She's wonderful. And she was suffering from part of her esophagus would spasm at times when she was eating. So very painful, as you can imagine. And so we just introduced this really simple practice of her taking a pause and giving thanks and taking a breath before she begins eating, and she has not experienced that tightening of the esophagus ever again. So these little practices can sometimes really help with chronic problems that we encounter. So I think it's great to thank the little piggies. You know, I think it's really important to do that. And, you know, you can have someone that, and I'm definitely not criticizing a person's choice, but I'm just using this as an example, someone who is staunchly vegetarian, eat their food without awareness, that may not be any better than someone who is, you know, eating something that has meat in it with the biggest amount of gratitude and consciousness. So, you know, it's just something to consider and maybe think about.
It's true. To get the consciousness. It's all about consciousness. And one of the words you used earlier is prana, which is a word that we're all familiar with. That's the most familiar word you've used tonight, right? Prana. thank you for at least tying us in. What I was taught is that the reason food tastes at all is the prana of it. Food that has prana tastes, because it's the life essence that you're tasting. That's why you do it.
It's
the life essence of it. So food that has been through a microwave has had all the prana dissolved. Neutralizes it. I don't know what it does to it, but it disperses the prana from the food, and it ends up as a lifeless thing. And you could look at a Kielian photograph of food before and after in a microwave oven, and before and after a conventional oven, and you see the food that's in the conventional oven still has the little aura. And this is just kind of flat.
Yeah, I would love to put that on my website. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, check it out.
A great example.
You'll find it on Google Images somewhere. And it's food that has been, or Kirlian photograph of food that has been, I'm sure somebody will find it in the chat room. Anyway, so prana and food and taste and do you want to go there with us?
Sure. Yeah, we could do that. Prana is essential to nourish ourselves because it speaks about vitality. And whenever we take something in through the senses, that is using prana. That is using the action of what prana brings. So it's actually a part of vata. That's one of the ways to look at it. If you think of vata, vata is movement. So the movement using our five senses, so the movement of perception, so taking in from the outside, so taking things in through our sense of sight, hearing, touch, and of course taste. Prana is involved in all of this. So you can have, you know, you really have to be conscious of what you're taking in through your sense of sight and what you choose to look at. That will affect the type of prana, if it's something high in prana or something low in prana. So if you're watching something that's quite violent, that's going to have an imbalancing effect as opposed to something that's beautiful and serene. But with food, you know, I've actually recently joined a local community-supported agriculture, a farm that, you know, grows local.
Marvelous, yes. Local. We have one around
here.
It's revived, yeah.
That's great. I hope that this continues to grow in our countries, because this is such a healing act to actually work with your local farmers to support them and to be nourished by them, because they're growing, they're using the soil that you are living near, and they're growing things that are meant to be eaten at certain times of year, so that's very helpful. And you also get your food much fresher, so the prana is even higher. I had just a really simply lovely experience of going out. Sometimes you could go and pick some of your own food as a way to help contribute with working on the farm. So I would go and pick parsley with my daughter, and then, you know, make a salad, like a tabbouleh salad, right after we picked the tomatoes and the parsley. And so the prana was exceptionally high. And so if people can find ways to do that, even if it's just for part of the year or, you know, little bits here and there, that's going to have a huge impact. So that way we can heal ourselves as well as starting to heal the earth and working with how much the earth can provide us with nourishment. Because if you think about it, our bodies are a reflection of the health of the earth. We influence each other. So that's a wonderful practice to try to find a community-supported agriculture, a small farm in your area. So that's a great way to cultivate prana. And another way is to really be aware of what you're taking in through the senses. So sense of sight, touch, and smell as well, as much as possible. So we were talking about prana. There's something else. I don't remember.
Well, we were talking about the prana is what food tastes and microwaves and things like that. So how not to eat destroyed pranic food.
Well, so if you cook something and then leave it in the fridge and have it as leftovers for days and days, I'm not talking about maybe one day, you know, you might lose a little prana, but if you really are in the habit of cooking something on a Sunday and eating it through until Friday, that's a practice that you may want to consider getting out of, because the longer the food will sit in the fridge, the more prana is depleted from that food. In general, canned foods, and I'm talking more about food, canned foods that you buy at the grocery store, they've been sitting around for quite a long time, even though they're preserved. You're much better off, like with canned beans, you're much better off buying the dried beans and soaking them yourself. Now, I know the issue with this is time. You know, everyone is so compressed with time, and it's so difficult for people to understand that you need to figure out ways to cook with more fresh foods. And one way with beans is you could soak them overnight and then cook them in a crock pot during the day while you're at work. So that would be a way to avoid canned beans, for example. It takes a little bit of effort, and it might feel like more effort at first, but once you get into that new pattern, that new habit, then it's quite easy to do, for example. Trying to think what else for prana.
So
well, you know, like...
What, Can you talk? Sorry, once you've spoken about your next thing, can you talk about develop a few breaths to increase your body prana and things like that? So you got one more thing, and then the breath, please.
I don't know why I'm laughing, but it actually goes along with the breath. So my next example was going to be if you're sitting in an office or in a home that has central air, you are not getting a lot of fresh air. You're not getting a lot of air from the outdoors. And we become habituated to getting comfortable being at a certain temperature, whereas it's helpful for us to actually get outside almost every day if possible, even on cold winter days, so that you're breathing in that fresh air and you're not just breathing in old stagnant air. Even if you can open your windows in the winter for a little bit just to get some fresh air in, that's really helpful. There are a lot of types of breath work, and it is called pranayama, so the practice of breath. Pranayama, so breath work, used in Ayurveda that can give different effects. And so this is can be very gentle. You can start at any level. Some people obviously become masters at working with the breath. But we all breathe. We all breathe without even thinking about it. We don't have to think about breathing. But when you can match conscious awareness with your breath, that can be a great tool for healing and for changing the way that you feel physically and mentally. So I'm happy to talk about a couple of different breath work that will have different effects for people. And these are, it is obviously good when you try to practice pranayama, when you try to practice breath work, to work with a teacher, work with someone who has experience, and they can help you. I believe there are videos on YouTube, because there always are, for anything that you want to find out about. There sometimes can be some beneficial videos to start out with, but it's always nice to work with someone in person if possible. So one simple breath work that you could begin to start with is simply sitting and breathing and watch your breath. You just actually begin to be aware of, is my breath really fast? Is it slow and more steady? Is my breath occurring more in the upper part of my chest? Am I able to breathe down low into my belly? Is there tightness in my belly when I try to take a deeper breath in? That right there is a great start. And a simple practice that I have people start with is you can lie down on your bed or on the floor and get a kind of like a thicker textbook. So back in the day when people had dictionaries, like those old school dictionaries, that would be a good type of book to use. You want to place that on your abdomen, on your belly. So you lie on your back and you place a thicker book on your belly, and you just begin to feel that pressure on your belly when you take an inhale. And, you know, as you're exhaling, you can feel that book kind of going down. And then when you take a breath in, you can feel the weight of the book. And that will begin to draw your attention down more into your belly, as opposed to just breathing from the chest. So when we get anxious, if we encounter a lot of stress, we tend to breathe more in our upper chest, as opposed to down lower in our belly. So that's just a simple practice just to begin to cultivate that awareness. There are different types of breath work. There's I'm trying to think of the English translation, Kabbalah Bhati. So the breath, the bellows breath, the fire bellows breath, that is a type of breath work done just using the nose, breathing in and out of the nose, that will cultivate invigoration and kind of raise your energy a bit. And those are slightly forceful exhalations through the nose and passive inhalations through the nose. So when you exhale forcefully using your abdomen, a passive inhale will follow naturally. And that's a good one to practice with a teacher. And you can, I believe you can find that on YouTube if you want to see how it's done. But that breath will help, you know, if someone's suffering from a little bit of weight gain, that actually will help a person lose weight. We actually, when we exhale, that's a means of our adipose exiting the body through our exhalations. I think science has just finally come to that conclusion
you
as
mean,
well.
You mean I can breathe this shit out?
You can. Yep, just keep breathing.
Okay.
Yeah, you can.
Fast as I can. But I actually...
Yeah, but do it through... Not through your mouth.
So,
what were you going to say?
One of the breaths that I've been using recently, which helps people to sit in and, to experience their feelings... is to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. That seems to have is a kind of, it's like a valve release system.
Yes.
So every time you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth, it reduces the internal pressure. And one of the things that we tend to do in our lives is to breathe in through the mouth and out through the nose. And that builds up the pressure, doesn't it?
You can, and absolutely. Yes. No, I agree with that. That is a basic yogic breath and very helpful to simply begin breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Well, you think when you exhale out through your mouth, you can expel more air in a shorter amount of time than if you're inhaling through the nose. Although over time, as you get used to it, you are able to get in quite a bit of oxygen through your nostrils. And your lung capacity will grow. Your abdominal cavity, you'll be able to pull the diaphragm down more to bring in more oxygen and prana. It is helpful when you're exhaling to exhale as much as you can until you have no breath left. It's almost like you're squeezing your lungs out like a sponge. So you're really exhaling everything that's sort of lurking there in your lungs. If we think about respiration, we're nourishing our blood that way through the lung tissue, and we're also excreting carbon dioxide and other gases and other substances which don't nourish the tissues. So breath work on a physical level is very beneficial. And, you know, what benefits the physical body will also benefit the mind and emotions. There is no separation. So, yeah, that's a great reminder. Just the simple yogic breath of breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. And then there's all kinds of variations of that as well. You start getting into retaining the breath. So after inhaling, there are ways to gently retain the breath for a number of seconds or a number of heartbeats. And then exhale, because when you retain the breath, your body's starting to metabolize. And then that makes your exhalation more efficient when you're getting the gunk out with the exhalation. There's also a type of breath work where you breathe in through one nostril and out the other nostril. And that's actually a balancing type of breath because in our bodies, the left side and the right side are divided into a solar or a sun type of energy and a lunar or moon type of energy, masculine and feminine energy. And the nostrils reflect that. So you can actually bring in cooler emotions and cooler sensations if you breathe through the left nostril, breathe in through the left nostril. And you can get rid of the more fiery emotions if you exhale through the right nostril. And then you can reverse that and bring in more of the heated type of experiences and processes if you inhale through the right nostril and exhale through the left. Have you heard of that? Have you heard of the body being divided in that way?
Yeah, very much. This is not really the seven rays, but this is like my kind of personal synthesis of it, is that your body responds to many different symbolic phase angles. Let's say your everything corresponds to a body part corresponds to the 12 frequencies of the zodiac, and
yes,
notes
right.
of the
like
scale
Gemini
and things
show.
Like that.
Yes, right.
So with all of those, you know, again, it's all correspondent because it's all one thing. It's all one fractal.
Yes. Right. I do like that idea of the zodiac reflecting, being reflected in different parts of the body.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of different emotions can get trapped in different
exactly.
parts of the body.
Exactly. And here's the thing, that, so I'd say about 70-80% of the time, I'll say, if somebody comes up to me and say, oh, you know, I'm feeling a stomach. I say, where are you hurting? And they say, you know, point to where it's hurting. They say, oh, there, there. And I say, oh, left thigh. That's female Sagittarius. You know a female Sagittarius? Oh, my mum's a female Sagittarius. All right, well, go think about your mum for a while. It might have a, you know.
Yes.
And, right. you know, various, yeah, our body parts, and they're also related to our, you know, predominant problems. Predominant
yes.
issues, like being a Piscean, I have terrible pains in my feet. So that's, you know, that's a thing. And because I've got Moon in Aries, I have headaches all the time. So that's my predominant disease, you know. So
I mean, I know we were talking about disease, but in a sense, it's still a beautiful way of our body communicating. Or all of the divine, all of existence communicating through our bodies. And that it's so clear that languages and different traditions have similar recognitions of that. So, you know, like for a Pitta person, so someone who's predominantly fire and a little bit of water, there are organs in our body which are related more to the fire element. So, for instance, the liver is absolutely related to fire. And so if a person experiences a lot of anger, a lot of unchecked anger, we're actually, it's normal to experience all the emotions and healthy, but when a person misdirects that anger or works more with reaction as opposed to response, so just reacting to a situation as opposed to being an observer first and then responding, these emotions will begin to crystallize in the organs, so we'll have a heated liver, and that will then exacerbate those reactive tendencies towards anger. And then also physical ailments will start to manifest as well. So for someone who harbors a lot of anger that is misdirected or reactive, they may experience certain types of skin rashes, let's say, particularly ones that are also very red and heated and inflamed. And they may not understand where that's coming from. Trying to give another example. There are different types of headaches. You know, there's a more heated, inflammatory type of headache as opposed to one that is more kapha-based. So a pitta-based headache may be more due to overthinking, overworking, you know, kind of like that burning in the eyes. And then like a kapha, which is more earthy, they're going to feel it more in their sinuses or their frontal, like the front of their head, that kind of heavy sinus congestion type of headache. But obviously these organs don't always harbor just negative emotions. When they're in balance, they serve us, of course. So if you take the heart and the lungs, they can harbor and hold a lot of sadness, a lot of grief. But the heart, when it's in balance, can manifest pure joy. And the lungs, if we think about being inspired, so taking in breath, that along with a balanced heart, that's pure joy. You can feel joy in your heart. So, you know, there's two ways to look at it, and there's ways to help balance these negative emotions that get lodged. And one way is Ritu Charya, seasonal cleanse.
Ritu Charya, seasonal cleanse disorder. No, seasonal yes. cleanse bottle, internal bottle brush.
Well, the trifla is the bottle brush part of that.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But you know, the first part of the cleanse is oleation. So actually drinking large quantities of ghee, and that begins to soften all of the crystallized emotions and improperly digested food that gets lodged in our tissues. The ghee can penetrate all the tissues of the body and begin to soften all that ama, all of that improperly digested food.
A sort and of then internal the basting. He's sort of yes. basting, you know, soft. It's well, because yes. everything is based on oil, isn't it? You know, your whole body, all the things of the organs, you know, the surrounding of your organs, it's
everything
all fat-based, isn't it?
Yeah, everything that contains our water. I mean, we're 75% or 73% water, and we need something to hold the water, and that would be oil, because oil and water repel each other, so it's a good container. Oil is a good container. You know, oil is said to be loving. There's a word in Ayurveda called shneha, and that means oily, and it also means love. So love is oily.
That's interesting.
Love kind of
I love oil
holds us together.
Because
yes.
I wrote a little poem. It's something like, I love oil because oil is fire in a coil. Do you know what happens when you freeze oil?
No, I don't actually.
It becomes wax.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Okay.
And when you heat oil, it becomes like spirit. These are all, it's like, you know, you've got the states of water, you got, you know, a state of wax, you know, not wax, we call it ice, and we have liquid water, and then we have gaseous water, and we have plasma.
Yeah.
Well, oil does the same thing, and that's what we call wax, and, you know, liquid oil, and then, you know, very fine, thin oil that flows, you know, like, and then the gaseous oils as well, like the butanes and the hydrogens.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. That's really interesting.
But it's interesting because they are... So, tell us, because this is another lovely little nugget of wisdom about the Ayurvedic view of oil and water. Because as you know, this is essential to life. Life could not exist without the relationship that oil has with water. What do they say about this? It's an interesting little nugget, please.
It is. Yeah, they both actually have very similar qualities to them. So water is fluid, as is oil. Water is considered heavy, as is oil. Water, if you think, there are 20 qualities inherent in all things. And so, according to Ayurveda, water is also oily, is in terms of if you have to think about qualities, and so is oil. So they have a lot of similarities. So they're sort of, even though they repel each other on a certain level, they're also kinfolk. And so we use oil a lot in Ayurveda to protect and to nourish. To protect and nourish all aspects of the self, including the physical body. Water is also one of the elements in the kapha dosha, out of those three constitutional types that I talked about. Kapha is responsible for stability, protection, and our physical makeup, our physical matter. So vata, I talked about vata. Vata is responsible for movement. Kapha is responsible for protection, stability, and our physical selves. So there's that relationship between water and kapha, and then that oily quality is used to protect and nourish the self as well. So they're kinfolk. They're kinfolk, for sure. I'm sure there's other... Water is also the basis for the first tissue that gets formed in the body called rasa, R-A-S-A. That is the first physical tissue that is created from food after we eat. And so rasa is sort of our basic, it's our starting point when we become physical selves. And that's mostly fluid, rasa. It's the fluids of our body. And then all the other tissues are created from that. So, you know, our muscle tissue, our bone tissue, our nerve tissue, our reproductive tissue, our adipose or fat tissue, all of these tissues are dependent upon having good quality rasa. So it all comes down to digestion and nourishing ourselves properly. So I can continue on. I can continue on with the cleanse. So after the oleation, after we're oily on the inside and everything has become less fixed, you know, our whole inside becomes more fluid. And there's a little bit of discomfort with that because no one likes to have things shifted around. You kind of have to do it, even if you're not comfortable with it. But you become kind of more fluid and soft on the inside. So that starts to break up crystallized, stuck, unprocessed, unmetabolized food and emotions. And then we do some processes where we give the digestion a rest by eating a very simple diet, specific diet for a number of days. At the same time, we're also heating up the body with body therapies and doing a specific type of external oleation, external massage, using a lot of oil that helps to bring all that gooey stuff that's stuck in our bodies into circulation so that we can eliminate everything that is not serving us, all those unprocessed, unmetabolized foodstuffs and emotions. This is where that herb triphala comes in as well, because triphala is used, it has a scrubbing action, so that bottle brush analogy that you used is very appropriate. It goes in and it scrubs all of our tissues, all of our cells. So it scrubs that ama out of our cells. So it's assisting. It also assists us to eliminate. So the process of eliminating through the GI tract, this herb is really useful for that. So then after you're left with kind of this cleansed body, there are other practices involved as well that can be involved, other therapies, depending on how deep of a cleanse the person goes through. But once the body is relatively cleansed, you need to actually slowly bring digestion back up, because you've been eating one specific type of food for a number of days. So you slowly reintroduce foods very specifically, and then you also go through a process of rejuvenation. So there's specific herbal jams that you eat that help to nourish the rasa, so that primal, that first tissue that's formed in the body. So you eat this herbalized jam. There's other herbs you take to help aid in digestion. And you also you bring foods back a little at a time to make sure your body can digest them properly, so you're not creating more of that gooey ama substance. You also receive, it's a good time to receive more of that oily massage. So your external body receives that love, receives that oily massage as a way to rejuvenate the body. All this time you're resting as much as possible, because your body is doing a lot of work internally at this time. So it's a great process. And I think there are all types of cleanses out there right now. It's becoming sort of, I don't know if a fad is the right word, but it's becoming more mainstream for people to do cleanses. And I think the intention is in the right place, because there's this unconscious or innate need for us to cleanse. We all feel kind of icky. There's a lot out there right now that is fairly toxic, unfortunately, in our environment, visually as well as foodstuffs. You know, that's a whole nother dark can of worms.
Well, and psychologically and philosophically, yes. And spiritually.
Absolutely. So people are, I think, feeling this need to cleanse without really knowing why. But, you know, you do have to be careful when you cleanse to really try to do it a proper way. I'm not going to say that there's only one way to do it. I, of course, am partial to Ayurveda because it has been around so long, and it just makes so much darn sense to me. And it sings to my heart. So that's why I believe it. And I've done it, and it works for me. So that's the only reason why I'm going to kind of back that up. There are probably other cleanses that are beneficial, but I just don't know, because I haven't experienced them. Have you ever done one? I know you've done a cleanse, JP, that was not intended.
Oh, yeah.
Like when we get food things, sometimes you get those unintended cleanses.
Oh, yeah. I've had my share. And I think, you know, sometimes you blame something. You could blame someone or you could blame yourself. But perhaps your higher self said, this boy needs a bit of a cleanse. Let's absolutely make him eat that stupid egg.
Yep.
Yeah.
That can absolutely happen.
You know, so...
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Love that story. Has happened. That's happened to me as well. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And you're kind of like, what is going on? You're like, okay, well, I guess this is a cleanse. And then, you know, then you have to find ways to rest and rejuvenate as well after you go through a purge like that. You know, hydrating yourself afterwards and that kind of thing. So I guess...
Pling plong, yes.
Was that me or you? I don't know. That was a weird noise.
I'm pretty sure it's coming from you. I don't have anything that's doing that.
Well, I think we'll just take that as validation.
Yeah. Somebody agrees.
I like that it was kind of a cartoony kind of sound. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. There was one other practice. It looks like we've got maybe about 15 minutes left or so.
So we have.
There's one other practice that I think is quite beautiful because it speaks about external light, the practice of working with external light as a way of healing both ourselves and the environment. And it's a kind of good balance between this going into the dark of doing like an internal cleanse, balancing it with this external light, this practice called Agnihotra. Have you heard of that, JP?
All I know is that in the ancient teachings, the Agnis are the lords of fire.
Absolutely. Ooh. Yes, Agni means fire. Translates as fire.
This is a good Sanskrit lesson as well.
And Hotra is like a ritual. So a fire ritual. There's one here in particular that I've practiced that is really beautiful and simple. And I learned it from a woman who teaches it to people for no cost. You know, she doesn't charge people or anything like that. This is meant to be taught to everyone. It used to just be done by renunciates, by Brahmins, but now everyone can do it. And it has such a beneficial effect. I think there was some kind of a study done in Russia where they actually were able to measure the positive effects of this ritual, like where it spread out. If someone's doing this fire ritual, it has a circumference of so many miles and it goes upwards so high, like very high, like beyond our atmosphere, supposedly, the beneficial effects. And so I really love that idea. It's a healing practice. It's done to heal the body as well as the environment around us. So, you know, if people start Googling Agnihotra, so that's A-G-N-I, that's the first word, and then Hotra, H-O-T-R-A, you can start to find information about this practice. You do need specific tools to do it, cow dung being one of them. Ghee being another, and the vessel in which the ceremony is done is a very specific inverted copper pyramid type shape. It's not a full pyramid. It's not pointy on the bottom. It's kind of flat bottom, but it is a pyramidal type shape, which is really fascinating. So that's a practice that is done at the moment, the precise moment of sunrise or the precise moment of sunset. So again, we're going back to this idea of stillness, of paying attention to our surroundings. Now, granted, I use one of those specific types of clocks. I try to sense when the precise moment of sunset is happening. I haven't gotten there yet. But some people can do it. They can sense intuitively, okay, it's now. But I use a clock, a satellite clock, to try to find the precise moment. And that's when you light the fire ahead of time, and then you say a simple chant at the precise moment of sunrise or sunset, and it has an effect for 24 hours. So anyone that is really interested in investigating outward practices, external practices, this would be a really beautiful ceremony to incorporate. There is a woman in the U.S. who, I think she just released a simple book about this. It might be called Agnihotra, and her first name is Ellie, and I can't remember her last name. But she's the one who taught me Agnihotra, and it was quite beautiful. And it can be done at home. So that's just another practice that perhaps your listeners would be interested in investigating. And so people who are suffering from darkness, depression, Agnihotra, there are Agnihotra centers in different parts of the world. I don't know about the UK, but you can perform this, or someone can do this around you, and it will have a beneficial effect.
If you simply Google Agni, A-G-N-I-H-O-T-R-A, you get images, you get how to perform Agnihotra. Agnihotra is a simple fire ritual from ancient times. Its practice lowers spiritual pollution, fights negative energies, and purifies the atmosphere. Well, there you go. But you don't have to set yourself on fire and you don't have to eat the cow dung, and you don't have to pour the butter over your head and set it on fire.
Absolutely not. That is not advised.
Okay, but sure. As long as I get everything in the right order.
Yes, exactly.
Because I could burn the oil.
And don't stick your beard too close to the fire.
There. Yeah. Right.
I don't want you to lose your beard.
That's right. Well, I've got plenty. I could lose a couple of inches and still get away from it.
You know how it goes, though. Once it goes up, that's it.
That's it. The bald, singed, hairless goon.
Yes.
Anyway. So that might be the end. It's like, hey, did you shave up? No, I didn't shave.
No, I just did acupuncture. Exactly. Did my own external cleanse, whether I wanted to or not.
That's right. That old kung fu thing where you pull your hair out with your fingers.
Ouch.
Yeah. Don't you remember David Carradine?
I don't.
Oh, maybe you're probably very young.
I'm ripe old age of 40.
Well, when I was a kid, there was a TV show called Kung Fu with David Carradine as the star. And in the beginning, the opening credits was his initiation rituals and all these things. And one of the rituals, literally pulling your own hair out.
Oh, my goodness.
Clump by clump.
And in order to have a perfectly bald head?
That's right. That's how they get the perfectly bald, smooth head.
Jeez.
Yeah, pull all the follicles.
I wonder if that's a mastery in managing pain, or?
Well, it's kung fu. It's the thing. And the next thing he does in the opening credits, he lifts up this cauldron of fire that has got these two dragons embossed on the outside. And it basically, he has to pick this thing up and move it from one place to another. Of course, he's going to burn the inside of his arms, that very sensitive place, the inside of your forearms. And it burns the image of the dragons onto your wrists, onto your forearms, like a tattoo, sort of permanent tattoo.
Oh my goodness.
So there you go. That's hardcore. Yeah. Anyway, so that was the TV show that I used to watch when I was a kid.
we don't have anything like that now.
So you don't have to do that. So it's like, I'm seeing that, because I'm looking at this thing and I see this bald man doing this thing with the robe, and I'm thinking, does it involve self-humiliation? No, anyway, go ahead.
It's very interesting, because we all do that to ourselves internally. I mean, that's just sort of representation of sort of the torment that we can put ourselves through, So maybe that's why we're fascinated with those kinds of films. It's just a reflection.
Indeed. Mm. So we're coming to the end. So do you want to do the thing?
Yeah, I'll do the chant. I'd like to just quickly say, I want to give the translation so people know what I'm singing. I'll sing in Sanskrit, and, be kind with your ears. I'll do my best. But this is the Maha Mrityunjaya Mantra, which means the great death-conquering mantra. So however you view death. I view death as your loss of connection with the divine. I don't view death as necessarily leaving our physical bodies. But you take that as how you want to take that. And the translation is, we worship the three-eyed Lord. So when I think three eyes, I always think about the pineal gland, who is fragrant and who nourishes and nurtures all beings. As the ripened melon is freed from its bondage, may he liberate us from death for the sake of immortality. So basically reconnecting with the divine, however you view that, reconnecting ourselves with our true natures as spirit. This is used as a healing mantra. It is used in times of if someone is experiencing illness of any kind, spiritual, mental, emotional, or physical. So I'm going to see if I have anything else to say about that. I guess I look at this mantra as a chant that awakens what is within us. So when they talk about the three-eyed Lord, which would be Shiva, it's really speaking about an aspect of ourselves, looking inward and awakening. So, okay. So, JP, I'm ready.
Okay, well, one thing I was going to... I remember I said I was going to tell you later about this. The note that you sang to me, during the break, I got a note from you, or a series of notes, so that I could give you a wash. That is this note here, this thing. Can you hear that okay?
Yes, I can.
So that's I'm just going to put that there gently in the background so that it gives you a bed to sit on and to bounce up and down on. But what's interesting is the note that you sang was a perfect F sharp, and the F sharp is the note of the planet's rotation.
Oh, wonderful. Well, let's hope I can repeat it this time around.
Well, just key into this for a second, and then start your thing.
Okay. Om Triumbakam Yajamahe Sugantim Pushti Vardhanam Urva Rukamiva Bantanam Mrityor Mokshiya Ma Amrita Ata. Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Did that help?
It was lovely. It was really nice. Yeah.
I was trying to, you know, just get a nice mix of it, because I was trying to, almost tried a bit of reverb on there. I don't know if it came through.
I don't know. I hope I stayed in F sharp. I have no idea.
No, you're fine. You were fine. You were fine. You were fine. It did the thing. So there you go, in F sharp, just at the right moment, at the end of the show, we're going to go back to B to do the regular credits here. But thanks so much, Shelyn Tetreault. How do people get to your? You've got several websites. What's the central portal?
Sure, it is my first name and last initial, so C H E L Y. nnt.com, and you can also Google Little Lotus. If you Google Little Lotus Ayurveda, that could get you there as well.
So thank you so much. This has been a lovely show. I've really enjoyed our little conversation tonight.
I did as well, JP. Thank you so much.
Bless your heart.
So much fun. You as well.
So have a wonderful new year, and I'll see you in the next season, shall we? We do a seasonal review.
That would be great, JP, and I hope you get some rest. You very well earned rest. You've been doing a lot of good work for others, so thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much, everybody, and good night, and Happy New Year, everybody. Time to go beyond.